Find her expert advice anytime at thinkblink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Blank Show, live on Sundays, 12 to noon, because it's football time here on Newstalk WSB. We are rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours and the numbers. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Andrew, if you wouldn't mind pumping up your end a little bit so I can hear you a little bit louder in my headphones, that would be awesome. Thinklink.com. That is the website, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. I am at Glink on Twitter. And if you go there now, I'm going to start tweeting during the show like we always do. So there's all kinds of cool stuff going on Twitter this morning, at GLINK. All right, lines are open. I'm going to get started talking about the economy. Glinkonomics is what my team has been calling it at home, which is sort of hilarious, but really what I do each week is take a little bit of a deep dive into what's going on in the world. And I have to say, this is sort of an interesting week. We saw FHA is going to take a $1.7 billion draw from the Treasury because they are losing money hand over fist. The numbers are absolutely astronomical. And it's interesting because a lot of the loans that are failing now, the FHA loans that are failing, are loans that were made during the housing crisis when nobody else would lend money to anybody, and borrowers were truly at a loss. They went to FHA, and so FHA did a lot of these loans, much bigger percentage than it normally did. And we've talked about this over the years. And now a lot of those loans are failing, and they're failing at a rate that is causing, for the first time in FHA's history, I mean, 70 plus years, FHA is going to take a draw from the government just to keep the required amount in its bank accounts, essentially. And what's interesting about this, is to me anyway, is that it points to a real discrepancy, because we want the government to take less risk, and yet we, meaning the real estate industry lobbying effort, so the realtors, the home builders, the National Association of the Remodeling Industry, there's all kinds of people whose livelihood comes from building new homes, selling new homes, selling existing homes, financing all kinds of purchases and refinancing, that don't really want the government to step out. And yet, there are all kinds of people who seem to want them to step in. And so it's an interesting push-pull that's going on in the housing industry. And against that backdrop, right, we see that home prices have been rising so rapidly. We talked a little bit about this last week. But Robert Shiller in today's New York Times, in the economic view of the business section, talks about how he thinks it's likely, possible, that the housing market has really been bubbling up, not just heating up. And one of the things that he says is during the housing bubble that preceded the 08 financial crisis, so he's talking 2003 to 2008, the largest 16-month increase in home prices was 22.7% for the period that ended July of 2004. So 16 months, roughly a year and a half, would have taken you from January or February or March of 2003 to July of 2004. That, in his mind, seems to have been the pinnacle of the housing crisis. And in that period of time, the increase of home prices was 22.7%. Now think about that. Home prices increasing at 22%, almost 23% in a 16-month period. It's kind of astronomical when you look in the rearview mirror. And yet, home prices were up in real inflation-corrected terms. In the 16 months that ended in July of 2013, right? So go back, it's 2012 to 2013, home prices were up 18.4%, 18.5%. So the only time that housing prices bubbled up bigger and faster than that was in the 16 months that ended in July of 2004. For his money, the very heart of the housing crisis. So he asks, is it possible that we're lapsing into what he calls a bubble mentality, a self-reinforcing cycle of popular belief that prices can only go higher? And that's the question that he's asking. Do we get to a place? Where do we get to a place? How do we get to the place mentally where we basically forget everything that's come before? So how much amnesia, how much housing amnesia or economic amnesia do we need to have in order to believe that this time housing prices are never going down again? Now, in places like Atlanta, and certainly I got this email from somebody last week saying, well, in my neck of the woods, nothing really much is happening. Where was he writing from? He's writing from Portland. Over the last year or so, Portland's home prices have gone up on a year-over-year basis 15-something percent. Home prices are definitely rising in Portland, Oregon. They're rising in Atlanta. They're rising everywhere in the greater metropolitan areas. I mean, there might be some places in like California that aren't. And certainly blocks are not increasing. Like, there are definitely communities in Chicago and in Atlanta and in Portland where you're not seeing that kind of an increase. Right? So maybe in his doorstep, he steps out and looks around and surveys all of the other houses that are for sale, and he sees a lot of foreclosures, and he doesn't see them moving. Well, that just means that the big money, which is run by hedge funds and by private equity groups that has been coming into real estate, hasn't discovered his neck of the woods, I guess, is all you can really say about that. So if they haven't discovered his neck of the woods, they're coming. And they're coming because the big money in real estate hasn't figured out that it is all a shell game, right? That the moment they stop pumping money in, that there aren't really right now enough home buyers to keep things going. So I've been getting emails from home buyers out there who are saying that homes are just going so fast that, and I got this, I answered this letter this week in my syndicated column. They wanted to know how clean a contract I felt that they could do in order to compete with the all-cash clean offers that are out there, right? Private equity money, hedge funds, all that kind of money, they don't really care what condition the house is in. They're scooping up these houses for cash at a lower price, they're winning them, and then they're putting some money into it to renovate, and then they're either flipping them, reselling them for a higher profit, or they're just renting them out for now. So they can't compete. The first-time buyers can't get in there because they have financing contingencies. So now there are agents like, well, don't put a financing contingency in. Don't put a home inspection contingency in. Don't put any contingencies in. Just make an offer. Really? So in my mind, for a home buyer who plans to live in the property, owner-occupied property, strikes me that that is an undue risk that you need to reevaluate. If you're going to go in there without any sort of contingency, you are taking on a really risky thing because you're not a hedge fund and you're not buying 10,000 houses. You buy 10,000 houses and one needs to be taken down because it's got mold that can't be remediated that you didn't see because you didn't send an inspector in. You don't really care. It's one of 10,000 houses. When it's the one house and you're going to live in that house and the house has to come down because there's mold in it that you didn't catch because you didn't have a home inspection, that's financially devastating. That's too much risk. And so I said, you know, Sam and I in the syndicated column, we basically said to them, hey, you got to really think about how much risk you as an individual are willing to take. Are you willing to put everything on the line just to buy a house? That doesn't make economic sense. There have to be controls. There has to be a way to protect yourself and all of the financial stuff that you've built up. And when those controls go away, when you are willing to cast them all aside, that is a bubble mentality. Because you must believe deep in your soul that one, either home prices are going up forever, which Robert Shiller says is a bubble mentality, or two, you believe you can outlast in the house the ups and downs of the market, which means that you're not really thinking about the cost to own and maintain the house over the next 25 years. Right? One of the other is probably true, or both. But in the meantime, you know, throwing all caution to the wind and not having any protections is really not the right way to buy a house. I don't think you should buy a house that way. I think that when you get into bidding wars with hedge funds and you toss all caution to the wind, you are asking for trouble. Economic trouble, mental trouble, marital trouble. Like, there's no end to the troubles that could get piled on when you just throw all caution to the wind and say, I don't care what it costs, I have to buy a house. You know what? You don't. You do not have to buy a house when everything is on the line. It's just too dangerous. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glenk. Rebuilding America one house at a time. Starting with yours, we're going to take calls coming back after news, weather, and traffic. Lines are open. Line up now, 404-872-0750 on News Talk WSB. 24 minutes past the hour, the Elise Glenk Show, Rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours, 404-872-0750. Sheila joins me on the line. Hi, Sheila. Welcome to the program.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. What's going on in your world today?
My husband and I, we're in the process of buying a house, and just this past week, the appraisal came in $10,000 less, the asking price.
That's not a surprise. And is that the list price or the price that you actually agreed to pay for the property?
The list price was $242,000, what we agreed to pay for the property. The house was appraised this past weekend, and it came out at $232,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now the seller wants my husband and I to pay all of the closing costs unless he's going to back out of the contract. What is our recourse?
Well, so the real question, were you getting financing for this property?
Yes, everything is just about finished.
Okay, and will the financing work if you're $10,000 below in the appraisal?
Yes.
Okay, so you don't have that to back out on.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you could sue the seller for something called specific performance.
Specific performance?
Specific performance.
And can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. Specific performance means you have to live up to the terms of the deal that you signed.
Okay.
So are you saying to him that you're only going to pay $232,000 because the appraisal came in at $232,000 instead of
$242,000? Yes.
Ah, so you are saying you are changing the terms of the deal, not the seller.
No, the listing price was $242,000.
Yeah.
Agreed to $242,000. The appraisal came back $232,000.
Yeah.
My understanding is the house has to be sold at the appraisal price, which is $232,000.
And why do you have that understanding?
What's the purpose of getting the house appraised?
The house is being appraised so that the lender knows when the lender is doing the financing, the lender knows how much is there so that it can be tied to, right, because the house is being put up as collateral for the loan.
Uh-huh.
But you can pay $242,000 if you want to. That's why I asked you if you were going to pay $242,000 or if, you know, what was happening. So
uh-huh.
You want to change the terms of the deal, not the seller. So you don't have recourse. The seller's telling you, fine, if you only want to pay $232,000, I need you to pay $10,000 of my closing expenses so that we can do this deal and be done with it. But he's not willing to give up anything because he's in the driver's seat. So you have to decide what you want to do.
So although we have signed all these contracts and everything at $242,000 and the appraisal came back at $232,000, now we have to honor the $242,000 that we signed on?
You do, or if you don't want to, and then your financing may or may not work, so then we have to go into it. Listen, we're going to take a short break, Sheila. If you want to hang on, I'll explain a little bit more about how this works.
Okay, thank you, I will.
All right, hang on. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned, we'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB. Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Klink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours. On News Talk WSB, our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Be sure to follow me on Twitter. I'm at Glink, already tweeting. During the show, of course, and would love to hear from you there. And, of course, you can feel free to call in. Happy to pay for the call, 1-800-WSB-TALK. So we were chatting with Sheila, who's buying a house, and the appraisal came in at $10,000 less than the $242,000, which it was listed for, and they offered a pay list price. But the lender's appraiser only thinks it's worth $232,000. And now the seller came back and said they want you to pay all the closing costs or he's backing out of the deal. And for you, Sheila, it sounds like you're confused a little bit about what the point was of paying for an appraisal if you're not going to actually follow it, which is great advice. And it ties directly to what I was talking about at the top of the show, which is that there is so much going on in the housing market, and it's just bubbling up. And when you decide to buy a house and then not have any contingencies or have an appraisal contingency and not even pay attention to it, then you have to talk about what risk you're throwing in there. So The lender is saying to you, okay, the appraisal is $232,000. How much of a loan are you asking to get?
$245,000.
You want a loan for $245,000?
But I'm not understanding you now.
So okay. When you went to get your mortgage, how much of a down payment did you tell the lender you were going to make?
This is a VA loan, so we didn't have to do any down payment.
So it's 100% financing.
Right.
So literally, you can't buy the home for $242,000 because it's only worth $232,000 and you're doing 100% financing.
Correct.
So So this is where it gets a little bit more complicated, because I don't believe with a VA you can pay for all of those closing costs that the seller wants you to pay for.
Okay.
I think legally you're not able to do that. And the reason you're not able to do that is that the VA is trying to protect you and protect its investment.
Okay.
So if you had $10,000, I assume you would put it as part of the down payment.
Well, in the beginning, we agreed to pay half of the closing costs, and that was fine. Everybody agreed on that. But when the appraisal came back in $10,000 less, now they want us to pay all of it. So that's what we kind of say, okay, what do we do now?
So if you had the cash available, it strikes me that you wouldn't be doing 100% financing, because even with the VA, doing 100% financing is a much more expensive option than even putting 5% down.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So where would you even get the $10,000 from to pay the cash closing? Is that going to wipe you out?
No, it won't wipe me out. I was just wanted to know, is it legal for them to do that? I mean, because we've paid for the inspector, we've paid for the appraisal, and now she's saying, okay, pay for this and pay for that, unless I'm going to back out. So we want to know, is that legal?
It is legal because you're changing the terms of the contract. But with the VA, I don't think they're going to like it if you go back and say, oh, by the way, we have a little side deal and we're paying for all of these other expenses.
Okay.
I don't think the VA is going to like it. And I think that the terms of your financing are going to be rejected. And if that's the case, it's not like you put any money down for a good faith deposit.
Uh-huh.
Right? So the seller is thinking to themselves, geez, I just want out of this deal. I can get $242,000 from somebody else, and I don't have to take a $10,000 haircut on the house.
Uh-huh.
Because
okay.
Maybe they have a loan for $230,000, and after they pay all the closing costs, then they're out of pocket, real money. Whereas if they, you pay the $242,000, then maybe they come out clean or almost clean.
Well, the lender told me that she has to change all the paperwork to reflect the 232 now.
Right.
Okay.
That's right, because they can't give you a loan for 245
uh-huh.
or 242
uh-huh.
for the property that's only worth 232.
Okay. Okay, so it's just up to me now if I want to go ahead and pay the entire closing cost to purchase the home.
Yes, but that will be disclosed to the lender, and the lender may say to you that runs afoul of the rules.
Okay.
Right? So if you were getting an FHA loan, there are very specific rules about what you can and can't pay for.
Uh-huh.
And so really the question is, how badly do you want this house? Because if it's against the rules for you to pay all those closing costs, are you going to go ahead and figure out a way to do it anyway and buy this house?
No, not at all. I didn't know that it could be against the rule. I have to really look more into the VA to find out what's legal and what's not.
Well, I would ask the loan officer if you have, tell her, I would say to her, this is what the seller is saying to me. Are you okay if I do this?
Okay.
But you really... you have to understand that that means the house is really costing you the $242, which means you go into it underwater.
Right. Okay.
And you're not putting anything down.
Uh-huh.
So you're financing 100%. You're paying all these extra expenses and costs.
Uh-huh.
Is it worth it? Is this the house that you absolutely have to have no matter what the cost?
I'm split between the middle now because we've looked at several houses, at least 60 or 70, and we've bidded on about five of them. We didn't bid high enough, so now we found this one, and everything seems to be working fine until yesterday when the appraisal came back in $10,000 lower, and she says, nope, you have to pay all the closing costs. So it's like, okay, here we go again.
Well, I understand the disappointment. I looked at 125 houses before I bought the house I'm in,
uh-huh.
and it wasn't even a hot market. We just kept looking and looking and looking.
Uh-huh.
So if you're looking for a little sympathy for me, you still have another 60 houses to go, and then I'm going to feel bad for you. But seriously, Sheila, you know, this is a serious conversation that you and your spouse or partner have to have with each other about this house.
Uh-huh.
Is the idea that you're going to stay here for 10 years or 20 years?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Is, right?
Yes, we are going to stay here. This is our house.
Well, okay, this
uh-huh.
is your house, and you both have good jobs that you feel comfortable are going to be there for the next 10 or 20 years.
Yeah.
Okay, so now that you fall into the category of you think you're going to outlast the ups and downs of the market, what happens if 232 turns out to be the high point and now property prices start falling again?
Uh-huh.
And you're underwater.
Okay.
What happens then? And what happens if you have to move to take a better job?
Right.
Or you know, there's some other reason that you have to move. You know, what people don't think long enough
uh-huh.
about is what is the worst case scenario? Like, if it's all rosy and you buy this house at 232 and next year it's actually worth 240 and the year after it's worth 242 and then, you know, over 10 years the house is now worth 275, when you sell it, you're still going to be under, maybe not underwater, but you won't have paid down that much of your mortgage,
uh-huh.
and you're still going to have a whole bunch of closing costs and expenses when you sell.
Right.
So it's not like at 10 years this is a money-making proposition for you.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So you have to think about what you're trying to get out of this house,
uh-huh.
how long you intend to live there, and worse, what happens if the worst possible scenario manufactures itself, conjures out of nowhere, you get a medical thing, somebody gets injured, somebody loses a job, you get divorced, your spouse dies,
uh-huh.
you are seriously injured. How are you going to afford to pay this off? What is going to happen with this house? And I don't think enough people think about that. I don't think you're thinking about this.
Oh, no, I didn't. Okay, so you're saying the lender would know the legal part of us paying the full closing costs.
Yes. Do you have a real estate agent who's been helping you?
Yes.
And what does the agent say about all this?
He says it's up to us if we want to do that.
Ask him if he thinks it's a smart move?
No, not really, because every time we settle on one thing with them, they change it to something else. So he's kind of like saying, you know, I'm kind of tired of them. Maybe we need to look at another house.
He is giving you really good advice.
Okay. Okay.
I know you. I can hear that you have house hunting exhaustion.
Yes.
You are sick of looking for a house to buy.
Yes.
And I'm going to tell you that that is not a good excuse to make a bad financial deal.
Okay.
So this is part of doing your homework. And I don't say to you, I looked at 125 houses before I bought this one, just to say I'm somehow better than you or I have more fortitude. What I'm saying is that sometimes it takes a really long time to find an investment to buy.
Uh-huh.
Warren Buffett this week said, you don't need many smart investments, just a handful, like four or five good smart investments over your lifetime to end up with more money than you thought possible.
Okay.
Right? This is not a great investment. You're being asked to do stuff that I would never do. You're going to walk into this house. If you think you're just going to be $10,000 in the hole, I'm saying on a net basis, you're probably going to be closer to $15,000 to $20,000 when you walk into this house.
Uh-huh.
You're going to have moving expenses. You're going to have other unintended expenses. You're going to then fix up the house and put up new curtains and buy some new furniture. And you're going to be $20,000, $25,000 in the hole the day you move in.
Right.
And then how long? And now you've got 100% financing, no equity in this property. And if anything goes wrong, any of 100 things goes wrong in this house, you could be upside down for the next 20 years.
Okay.
So I'm saying your agent is giving you good advice. These people change the picture, and you know what? They're entitled to want more money for their house. But now they know that it only appraised at $232,000, and their $10,000 asking price is above the market price, and they may learn that the first offer is the best offer. And that is a lesson that so many sellers have learned over the years, and they learn it late. They learn it after that first offer has walked and the second offer has walked, and now it's 6 months or 9 months later, and they're like, gee, I really should have taken that first offer. That is their lesson to learn. You can't teach them their lesson. Your lesson is that no matter how many houses you have to look at, if it isn't right, it isn't right. And you are far better off renting than ending up in a house where you're $25,000 or $30,000 in the hole on day one.
Okay.
That's your lesson.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much. You have shined a light on things that I didn't think about.
Well, I think you will find the right house, Sheila, and I think you'll find it soon, but I really don't think it's going to be this one. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. It's 48 minutes past the hour on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
54 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Bill joins me now. I'm from Marietta. Hi, Bill.
Hey.
So how can I help you today?
Maybe your crystal ball. I live in East Cobb in Marietta, which appears to be a pretty hot seller's market right now. So we have signed on a new house that won't be available until late April. My current house I've been in for 30 years, and I'm trying to decide whether to list it right now or to wait until April and list it then. And I'm trying not to learn too many lessons the hard way. So I'm trying to solicit several different people's opinions. And I know how to run the numbers as far as, okay, this is the real cost. I have to move into an apartment, put the stuff in, and all that kind of good stuff.
So
I'm trying to look ahead to see when supply is going to equal demand down the road, what might be 6 months from now. So how about your opinion?
Well, I think that you have two opportunities. And I think that it's probably going to cost you $10,000 to $15,000 to sell your house and move into a rental before you move into your new and then move again and move into your new house. So let's just say that $15,000 is the operable number.
Works. Okay.
All right. Is that the number you came up with when you were doing your numbers?
I was thinking between 10 and 15.
All right. Well, so I'm going to guess the crystal ball is working at the moment. I'm going to go with 15 because there's always unexpected expenses. So Now your house is available late April, or let's just say mid-May, because builders might be 2 weeks late. So if you sell and then you move, it's a pain in the neck. It's going to cost you $15,000. The question is, are you going to get $15,000 more or be able to save $15,000 by selling at the beginning of the spring selling market, which would be end of January into the beginning of February, which would actually be the right time if you wanted to close by, let's say, the first week of May. And my sense is that the market is going to be very hot in the first part of January because the Fed has determined that they're going to keep interest rates super low. The Fed has made the decision that they're not going anywhere with interest rates. And Janet Yellen, who is now the likely contender that Larry Summers has backed off of taking over Ben Bernanke's job at the Federal Reserve Bank, she is known to be a fan of quantitative easing. She is known to be thinking that we should continue quantitative easing for some time to come because the economy is just simply too weak. And so if she continues quantitative easing, mortgage interest rates are going to be low. In fact, they've come down again this week. They were at about 4.75. Now they're under 4.5 for a 30-year fixed-rate loan. And I think they're going to stay there through the fall and into the beginning of next year, which would be the perfect time for you to sell your house and for someone to close on that kind of financing. So if you move in, just move once, and you wait until January, then the calculus changes. Can you get an extra, you know, will you be able to maintain the same purchase price but spend $7,000 less because you're only moving once? And I think nobody knows for sure, but my sense is it's a good bet that the answer is yes.
So the bottom line is you're thinking is wait until January to February to list the house.
I think you wait until the end of January to list the house. And the fallback position is if for some reason you see the market slowing dramatically after Thanksgiving, you might list in December, which is when very, very serious people list and very, very serious people are buying. Right? Because only people who really want to buy and really want to sell operate around the Christmas holiday season, and then you could put it on then. But if not, I would, if things seem to be going swimmingly and nothing much is changing, I would wait until mid-January to the end of January, find the right agent, go out, market it, blow it out of the water, pictures on the internet, everything, tell everybody you know, and I think you're going to get a fast offer if your house is in great condition. And if you live there 30 years, hopefully it's up to date, but assuming great condition, that's when you put it on and that's when you sell. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Bill, let me know what happens. I'm Elise Klink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Klink is on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Klink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. And at WSB, we want to congratulate the Georgia Bulldogs on their epic win over LSU yesterday. Awesome. 44-41, and they have jumped up to number 6 on both the AP and coaches polls. And we are the home of every Georgia Bulldogs football game. WSB, don't miss the action. And then, of course, Sunday mornings, the reason we are now on at 12, don't miss Bulldog Brunch, which is on 10:30 to noon. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. Lines are open, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online, thinkglink.com. If you're interested in investing in real estate, you should check out my latest creation. It is an 18-part series called The Intentional Investor, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate. You can find out more at thinklinkstore.com. Follow me on Twitter, at Glink. We're already tweeting during the show. I want to change tax just a little bit and ask a question that I think is, it's got to be on your mind. I know it's on my mind. And here's the question. Do you think that it's another shell game in Congress and that Congress, the odds of Congress actually shutting down the government this Thursday, or I guess it's Tuesday, October 1st, is when it's going to really officially sort of start. What do you think the odds are? Because I'm looking at this and I'm thinking to myself, it would be absolutely catastrophic if the government would really just shut down and run out of money. And now October 17th is basically the day we run out of money, which is, I don't know, like 19 days from now. And Treasury Secretary Jacob Blue this week warned that we'd have just $30 billion in cash by October 17th, maybe even sooner, and it's much sooner than they thought. And it seems to me, and last night there was this, well, I guess it was super early this morning, this historic vote where basically the Senate passed something that would keep the budget going, you know, the office open, and the congressional Republicans sent through a bill, and they said that the only way we're doing this is if you pull back on Obamacare and if you, you know, a few other little things, restore this tax cut and all the rest. And I thought to myself, why hasn't, from a financial point of view, why hasn't the stock market gotten more nervous? Because every other time we've reached this, basically a budget impasse, and we're a lot closer to the edge than we've been almost any other time, the stock market has kind of gone bananas and dropped as much as, you know, 1,500, 2,000 points. Didn't happen this time. And we've seen, you know, I guess there's been a little bit of freezing in the bond market, but not really much. We haven't seen much going on abroad. And I'm just wondering, do you think that this time everybody understands this is a shell game, that what's going on in Washington, that they're going to figure out some way to keep the government open, because we've never not had the government open. And even though it always seems like we're really close to the precipice and we're at the edge, that nobody believes they're actually going to be dumb enough to go over it? Or is this really the end? This is where it's going. That the government, this is it. The Republicans and the Democrats have now gotten so far apart that there's no way to come together at all. And everybody is just dug in their heels and they're done. And we're going to have the first government shutdown in 17 years starting on Tuesday. Which is it? Because when I look at it, I think to myself, you know, I understand that everybody's got their points of view, and I understand that we've never been further apart. Republicans and Democrats are just way far apart. And I also understand that everybody else in the country, you know, most of, like, say 90-95% of the country is still suffering through what's been going on with the recession. And really, for so many Americans, and I say this from time to time on the show, but people still aren't over this recession. We still don't have the jobs back. We still have elevated unemployment. We still have the Federal Reserve Bank saying, yeah, we're going to still buy $85 billion a month in bonds off the balance sheet, just basically printing money to do that because we need to keep what's going on as good as it can be so that we can sort of juice the economy and try and get more people employed and focus on employment. And I just wonder how we get to a place where it looks like there's no return, and yet nobody seems to be that nervous about it. The financial system just normally would have reacted by this point in time. And so on Barron's this morning, or yesterday, Barron's comes out on Saturday mornings, you know, the headline is budget disaster. And they talk about, you know, the true budget disaster isn't the fact that we're going to go over the edge on Tuesday. The budget disaster is if we don't cut entitlement spending, especially on the baby boomers, that our children and our grandchildren could face an economic calamity worse than the Great Recession, as deep as the Great Depression, and why aren't we focusing on that issue? That's the cover of Barron's. And meanwhile, you know, Randall Forsyth, who's the editor, is saying, yeah, I mean, aren't we getting to a place where we should be actually doing something? And I'm looking at this and I think to myself, how do we get to a place where we can't even understand how to keep the government open past Tuesday? And why isn't anybody caring about it? Why isn't the bond market reacting? Why isn't the Dow reacting? So you could say, well, the Dow was down 1.3% this week. But that doesn't really mean much, right? The Dow has been floating between, say, 14.9 and 15.6, maybe a little bit higher than that, for a while. And so it ended the week down about 192 points at 15,258. Okay, so you can say, well, they're, you know, nervous about it. But that's really just, you know, it's not much. It's not much. And yet, we're at a place where if we can't pay our bills, and by October 18th or 17th, whatever that date is, that's actually going to be a very serious time where it's the people who are on Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, they're the ones who are not going to get checks. Now, the Republicans in the House did pass a secondary measure saying that our armed forces would still get paid no matter what happens. Right. But everything else, not so much. And so I suppose, you know, when we had our last caller and he said, how was my crystal ball? You know, my crystal ball isn't so bad at predicting what's going to happen with interest rates next January or February. But I have to say, all bets are off if the government actually shuts down, and if it stays shut down for any period of time, because it's one thing for it to technically shut down on October 1st for 24 hours and then some deal is made. That's one kind of a shutdown. But an extended shutdown where everybody digs in their heels and we actually get to October 18th and we literally run out of money and we don't write checks and we don't use the Federal Reserve printing presses is another thing. And that is when everybody's going to get very nervous. Because I don't think anybody around the world is that nervous right now. I think everybody thinks we're going to come to our senses and we're all going to make a deal. And it may not be the deal that everybody wants. But everybody's so far apart now, just getting some deal on the table is going to be a good deal. And yet, I think if we go past Tuesday and we start moving towards the 17th, right, that's 3 weeks. To a little over 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, to try and get from the place where there's a deal to the place where we're actually really going to have a deal, like, and that's going to take effect. And if we don't get there, what that's going to mean, I do think you're going to see the rest of the world start to get very nervous. I think it's not even going to take that long. I think that once we pass Tuesday, and then it's Thursday, and then it's the following Sunday, and we don't have a deal, I think you're going to watch the stock market start to dive. And I think you're going to see markets around the world start to get very, very nervous. Very nervous. So how is that going to change what you do? And the answer is, in the short term, I don't know that it will, unless you are part of a massive government layoff, in which case you're going to have to find out how to live without an income for a while. Or you are a senior who's living on Medicare and you don't have any other income because during the Great Recession, you used up all of your money when you stopped earning interest on it, which you still haven't earned. So you're going to be in trouble. People who are on Medicare and Medicaid might get in trouble simply because their doctors are not going to keep treating them after a while. They will for a while, but then after a while when they don't get paid, that could be a problem. So it'll be interesting to see where the pain is, where the pain point is. I should say pain points are, because I know that for me, I am going to get very nervous if we can't get to a budget deal. And I do think the stock market is going to drop, and I do think interest rates are going to go haywire. And all of the careful planning and plotting that the Fed has done to try and juice the economy could disappear in a moment. In a moment. So we'll have to see what happens. So just wondering what you were thinking about that. So I'm going to put something out on Twitter, at Glink. Join the conversation there. Feel free to call in 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let me know what you think. And when we come back, we're going to do a quick prize pack. We've got a prize pack to give away today. We're going to take your calls and talk a little bit more about the economy and what this means to you. I'm Elise Glink. We are rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time. Don't forget that we are the home of the Georgia Bulldogs, and we broadcast every Georgia Bulldog football game. I'm just going to trip right over that. But I do want to congratulate the Bulldogs on their epic win over LSU, 44-41, and jumping to number 6 in the AP coaches poll. Congrats, guys. 404-872-0750. We have a four-pack of tickets to give away to the 30th Annual Fall Home Show, October 4th through the 6th at Cobb Galleria. A pair of passes to see the advanced screening of Captain Phillips on October 9th at the Regal Atlanta Station. A pair of tickets to see Kris Kristofferson, in concert October 20th at Atlanta Symphony Hall. Produced by ASO Presents, the weekend prize pack is presented by McDonald's McCafe. I'm loving it. Value of $160, and we're going to give it away to the fifth caller, 404-741-0750. Good luck. Be nice to Crystal. She's taking your calls. Steve joins me on the line from Alpharetta. Hi, Steve.
How you doing, Elise?
I'm doing fine. What's your thoughts today?
Question that I have left on is, most of the major brokerage companies are going to tell you to stay the course in times like these, primarily because they don't want people touching with their products, you know, messing with the stocks.
Yeah, why would they want to take less money?
Well, my question is, why not move stuff into cash for the short term to protect it?
I think it's not a bad idea. So you can wind up in a situation, if you don't have a plan in place, right? You could wind up in a situation where everything just sort of stays in cash because you never find the buying opportunity and then you miss it again. So as long as you have a plan for when you're going to put the money in cash, when you're going to take the money out of cash, how you're going to deal with it, that's the key thing to being a successful investor. If you're going to buy in the dips, you have to predetermine what dips are.
Well, what I would consider doing, maybe taking, we're talking maybe there's a couple of hundred thousand in cash in stocks. The rest of it is tied up protected assets, which I'm not worried about. But I don't want to be sacrificing a good portion of that. So I'm talking maybe 30-35% of that allocation and move it into cash temporarily when this whole thing blows around.
I don't have a problem with that. I think it's not a bad idea. I personally think that we are heading for some sort of a more significant drop. I do think that Congress is going to dig in their heels. I think they're going to call the bluff this time. I think that the Republicans are going to say, you know what, we're not doing a deal October 1st, and we don't care. And we'll see what happens, and we'll see how bad it is. It isn't going to be as bad. So if they do that, what that means is that then the stock market will start to react, and the stock market will go down because of the uncertainty. I'm not saying that either side is right. I'm just saying if they do that, I do think the stock market will fall, and so moving stuff into cash would make some sense. 27 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We will take more of your calls next after news, weather, and traffic on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on anytime at ClarkHoward.com and midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
Minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. Congratulations to the Georgia Bulldogs on their epic win over LSU. WSB is the home of every Georgia Bulldogs game. Be sure to tune in. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. We're going to talk about investing in real estate, some of the new twists and turns this week. We are also taking your calls, 404-872-0750. Starting to have a very interesting conversation online on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, where one of my followers tweeted, I believe the country can survive a government shutdown far better than it can survive Obama's unaffordable health care act. To which I replied, when the ACA was announced several years ago, I questioned on CNN what the cost would be for average people. I thought higher. And it is turning out that for many people who are already paying for health insurance, that the cost is higher. And sure enough, my costs have been going up like crazy the last couple of years for our insurance premiums. We just got a notice from our insurer that our plan is now defunct. But if we can continue with it, it's grandfathered in, but the minute we drop it, it'll never be available ever again, and we can go online and see what is available. So in the state of Illinois, which is where I'm based, our state is joining, and our health care exchange opens on Tuesday, and we'll just have to see what happens there and what the real prices are. I shall report back next week. 404-872-0750, Diane joins me on the line. Hi, Diane.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
You're on the show. What can I do for you today?
Yes, I would like to get some info on the HARP 2 loan or the NACA that's in Atlanta now, and they're going to be here till Monday. But as far as the refi, I didn't know which way would be the smart way to do this.
So HARP 2.0 is a program that's run by the government. NACA is a nonprofit organization that is basically helps people out, but my feeling is that they don't always deliver what they say they're going to deliver.
Right.
So have you actually talked to them about what they're doing?
No, I haven't. I just did some research on the internet and read quite a few different, like you just mentioned, different things, so I didn't know really what to count on if I decided to do it that way.
Yeah.
Or go with my original. We have a servicer, but not a mortgage company. And the Quicken Loans was offering a refi,
mm-hmm.
and at no closing with a HARP too. But at the end, when it came down to it, at the end there was like $2,800 I think added to that to refi with a
yeah.
HARP 2. Should there be fees to do that with a HARP 2?
Yeah, there can be.
Okay.
Absolutely, there can be. You know, HARP is a government program. If you go to makinghomeaffordable.gov. That's the program itself is listed there, and HARP is the Home Affordable Refinance Program. So if you're qualified for HARP, that tells me that you're underwater?
Actually, she told me we're borderline. We're not. We're just right there even.
So
we're not underwater, and I guess we're completely even with that.
Right. So you're at parity, which means that if you tried to sell, you would be underwater, right, after closing costs. You're
right.
Functionally underwater, but you're about parity. So that's great because that means that home prices are rising fast where you are, which is terrific.
Right.
However, you don't have any equity in the property, and so you don't qualify for a regular refinance. But
okay.
as part of the Home Affordable Refinance Program, you do. And
okay.
so have you heard me talk about my four rules for a home run refinance?
I haven't. I listen to you from time to time quite a bit, but I don't think I've heard that one.
So let me tell you it right now.
Okay.
So that you keep it in mind as you're going out and you're talking. So there are four rules for a home run refinance. Number one is you lower the interest rate. So where's your interest rate on the loan?
We're at 7.25.
Very high. And what are you going to be able to go down to?
Hoping as low as possible. I think we were offered a 3.99, but we didn't. There's nothing concrete with that.
Okay. So you're going to lower significantly.
Right.
Number two, you lower your monthly payments. What are your monthly payments now?
$1,245.
What are they going to go down to?
I believe it was going to be like $1,190, something, somewhere in there. She didn't give me an exact amount there.
So you might go down from $1,200 a month to $1,000 a month.
Yeah, and another thing, I think it depended if we did went to a 10-year versus a 15.
Okay, so that's number three. You shortened the loan term. So you were at a 7.5% or 7.75% on a 30-year.
Uh-huh.
And how many years left do you have on the loan?
21.
And you might go down to 15 or 10 years.
Right.
So you're shaving years, maybe even a decade, off the amount of time you have left.
Uh-huh.
And the fourth is to manage the closing costs, which for you are zero, and they're going to be built back into the loan amount.
Okay, right.
This is a home run refinance.
Okay.
Home run. Because even if you just got three out of those four, even if the only one out of those four you got was you were shortening your loan term from 21 years to 10 years,
mm-hmm.
I would say this was a home run.
Okay.
Because the amount of money you're going to save for 10 years of not making $14,000 a year in payments, $144,000 saved.
Right.
In what universe is that not a home run for you?
Right.
I mean, let's just imagine it. So now you are going to save $144,000just by even if you had the same payment. Right? Just
right.
not making that $1,200 payment a year. $144,000 saved. And you have to pay $2,800 in closing costs that you don't have to pay out of your pocket. You just sort of gets built in.
Right.
Okay.
Does this sound
like a home run to you? Get excited.
Definitely.
I don't hear you excited about this.
Definitely. I had another question I was about to ask.
Wait, but first I'm going to say to you, this is a great loan, but I don't want you to just take it because it's the only one that you know about. I want you to call three or four other lenders that are participating in HERP 2.0.
Okay.
All the major lenders are. I want you to call them and see if you can get a better deal.
Okay.
And I want you to do it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of this week. And then if you can't, and nothing seems to come close, go back to Quicken Loans, which absolutely wants your business, and I want you to get this deal done and get it in writing.
Right. Okay.
All right. What's your next question?
I've heard that if you go ahead down to the 10 and you do have the higher payments, it might be better to stretch to the 15 and double up on your money each month to make your principal come down a little quicker.
So you'll get a lower interest rate on the 10 than you will on the 15, so your savings will be a little bit higher.
Uh-huh.
I would go for the 10-year. If you could do it and be done with it, 10 years is like it evaporates in a moment.
Right.
And since you don't have any equity in the property, you're going to build up a ton of equity so fast with that.
Okay.
So if you can do it and you really feel confident about being able to do it, I would do that and get this loan paid off in 10 years.
Right. Okay.
I mean, in 5 years, you're going to be like, oh, my God, I've got, you know, more than a third of this loan paid off, and in another 5 years, it's gone entirely.
Right.
You are going to be so happy.
That's a home run, huh?
Home run refinance, and you've got one in your hot little hand.
Right. Okay.
All right, go close the deal, because it's not a deal till you sign the papers.
Right. What kind of interest rate should I shop for or they're offering now?
It's not really, you know, the interest rate under 4%, and that's part of why you're paying a little bit more in closing costs and fees, is amazing. Right now, they're offering, if you had equity in the property, you could still get in the low threes on a 10-year, but you don't have any equity in the property. So just to get something with a 3 in front of it is unbelievable, but even 4.0 is great.
Okay.
Don't play the game like, oh, well, I wonder if I could get an extra tenth of a point off.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. Okay. Keep in mind, here's what I want you to keep in mind, Diane, right?
Okay.
$144,000 that you don't have to pay over 10 years of your current monthly payment.
Okay.
That's what I want you to keep in mind. So even if your payment didn't change, you would save almost $150,000 in 10 years.
Right.
The rest of it is insignificant compared to that, right?
Right.
But on top of that, your payment is going to go down from 12-something a month to 1,000 a month.
Okay, right.
Keep your eye on the prize.
Okay.
And go get this deal done. And let me tell you something. If interest rates drop through the floor, because it looks like we're going into another recession,
yes.
If you've got equity, you can refinance again.
Okay, I hadn't thought about that.
So who cares?
Right, okay.
All right?
That's right. Okay.
By Wednesday, I want you to tweet me or send me an email that you have done this deal.
All right, I'll do it.
All right.
You will. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Diane. Congratulations and good luck. 404-872-0750 on the Elyse Kling Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time. Evelyn joins me on the line. Hi, Evelyn.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. So what's new in your world?
I just, you know, it's sort of past tense, but I wanted to know what to do for the next time we do this. We bought a house. We looked it up on the internet. I didn't want to use an agent because I didn't want to feel the pressure that we had to buy. So we did all of the research ourselves. We found the house. We made an offer. And we realized that the agent, the seller's agent, was going to give the full commission.
Yes.
So nobody was able to tell us that because we got several agents telling us, no, you need an agent. Anyway, but nobody was able to tell me why.
I'll tell you why right now. Because the seller makes a deal with their agent that they will pay them a 6% or a 5% total commission, and then that seller's agent agrees to split it if there's a buyer's agent. And the key word in that sentence is if. If there's a buyer's agent. And when you do all the work and you come on your own, you now have zero representation, and the seller's agent gets all the money. So
now,
you have put yourself into a box that's just begging for trouble.
Well, what we did is we got a lawyer who looked over the contract, and, you know, we were able to, you know, go, you know, very comfortable to closing. But the agent, I told them, you need to come down on the price of your commission, because otherwise I'm going to get an agent and they're going to get half of your commission. So they came down with 1.5% of their commission. And so, but then now I was thinking that when we do that again, can we negotiate a lower, a bigger amount of their, because we negotiated that out of the price of the house.
Okay. So, can I ask you why, okay, the fact that you got 1.5% out of the agent on the price of the house, good
yes.
for you.
Okay.
Why, isn't the deal done yet?
Yes, it is.
So then when, you mean the next time when you buy another
yes.
house?
Yes, yes.
Are you buying another house?
Well, not right now, because this house is under construction. So, but, you know, eventually we're going to do that again, probably.
Okay. So, you can try, but if it's, okay, so now there's different kinds of agents, right? I mean, they're all real estate agents, but agents who work for a developer may have less room to negotiate than agents who work for just a seller who owns an existing home.
Okay.
Because the agent who works for the developer has to get the developer to come down in price, because that agent may only get a 3 or 4% commission to begin with. So if they're giving back 1.5%, that may be all that they're able to do.
Okay.
But the developer, or they have to get the developer to come down, the developer of new construction housing doesn't like to reduce the prices, because then it changes the pricing structure for all the other houses in the area. And so when you're negotiating a new construction, it's very hard to get much of a discount at all. What the developers like to do is throw in free stuff. Upgraded tile, upgraded carpet. They'll throw in an extra patio. They would rather give you free stuff than dollars off, because that doesn't change the pricing structure of the houses in the neighborhood.
Okay.
So there's a different thinking that's involved. And even on an existing home, if the seller's agent has only agreed to sell it for a total commission of 5%, 2.5% for him, 2.5% for the buyer's agent, then giving you 1.5% still means that they make a little bit more. You can try to ask for more, but I will say, Evelyn, that, you know, you sound like you did it all the right way. And you did hire the attorney, and it all seems like it's that you're being covered and protected, but most
uh-huh.
people couldn't do what you did. The fact that you got 1.5% off is great. You can always ask for more, but just be prepared for them to say no. 50 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com. And find Elise Klink live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Congratulations to the Georgia Bulldogs on their epic win over LSU. 44-41, they jumped to number 6 on the AP and coaches polls. You can listen to every Georgia Bulldog game here on News Talk WSB, and then follow it up with the Bulldog Brunch on Sunday, which is why we're on noon to 2. I will be back next week at noon. I think it's at noon. We'll see what happens. Pretty sure it's at noon. Anyway, join me next Sunday for another edition of the Elise Klink Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours. In the meantime, if you are interested in investing in real estate and you want to know some of what I know, at least the most important parts, go to the thinklinkstore.com. Thinklink.com, click on the red house. Take a look at my Intentional Investor Series. It is everything you need to know to be wildly successful in real estate and get yourself out on the right foot. Do it now, folks, because I got to tell you, it is not going to be long, maybe by mid-next year, when interest rates are going to go up, and it's not going to be the same market that it is right now. All right, have a great week. If you've got questions, find me online at thinklink.com. Follow me on Twitter. We'll be tweeting all week, and I will talk to you again next Sunday. Have a great week, everybody. I wanna